You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast, featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked, to find that gambling is going on in here.
God damn it, Eston, am I fired up for NFL Week 3. I choked real bad in Week 2. Gave out so many sharp nuggets in last week's Bet Slippin' Podcast episode. And then I let the injury noise get to my head and had a really weak NFL Week 2. Went 1-4 in the contest. Broke even in my best bets. How'd you do? I don't think you fared any better, did you?
No, I was right around that. I was 0-5 on my 5 picks from the show. And once again, a week where, you know, all in all 16 games considered, I had some great picks in there. But the 5, for whatever reason, I felt strongest about on Wednesday, did not carry through with me. You got to be prepared to counter later in the week, I suppose. And looking forward to getting back on the horse here this week.
For sure. Yeah, I'm eager to... I'm chomping at the bit to break down this NFL Week 3 slate because I could have easily had a winning week last week. I just let injury reports and practice injury reports get too much in my head. We'll talk about that when the time comes and the various the various situations in which that occurred. But I think this is a pretty standard bed slipping podcast we have lined up this Wednesday. Obviously, we're covering the Week 3 slate, and then we're going to finish off with our best bets. So the whole thing's going to be time-coded. I don't see any reason to putz around or beat around the bush. Let's dive into it. What do you say?
Let's get into the games.
All righty. So we're starting off on Thursday Night Football, right?
Yes, sir. Quick word before we go in, all our odds on this show, Bet Slippin' Podcast, are from Tipico Sportsbook. It's a global sports betting leader. It's now live in New Jersey and Colorado. Make your favorite sports more interesting with Tipico's fast and easy mobile sportsbook app. For a limited time, new users from this podcast will enjoy a special welcome bonus. Terms and conditions apply. You have to be 21 and up. See site for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER for New Jersey, 1-800-522-4700 for Colorado. Get your bonus today at usatodaybet.com/podcast. That's usatodaybet.com/podcast. And we'll just dive right in from there. Thursday Night Football, as you said, Jeff, the 2-0 Carolina Panthers visit the 1-1 Houston Texans Thursday night at 8:20. What a beautiful matchup we have here. Good thing the Panthers are 2-0. It's really, really saving it because the Texans, you thought they were bad coming into week one. Boy, they got a whole lot worse. Tyrod Taylor out for the foreseeable future. Davis Mills going to make his first NFL start here in week 3. Panthers, big 26-7 win on home field over the rival Saints last week. Texans, they are who we thought they were in a 31-21 loss at the Cleveland Browns. I little to say here about the Texans. I'm on Carolina. They're 2-0 against the spread so far, 0-2 against the over-under. So credit to you, Jeff. You were high on that defense coming into the season, at least higher than me. You know, holding the Saints to 7 points last week after New Orleans routed the Green Bay Packers in week one. I'm impressed. Sam Darnold looks fine. Sam Darnold looks good enough to tear apart this Houston Texans defense as everyone other than Trevor Lawrence will the rest of the season.
It's a bummer what happened with Tyrod Taylor against the Cleveland Browns. Actually, the Texans plus 12.5 in week 2 was my only Circa contest winner. I gave that out. It was also my only winner on sides last week in our best bets for the NFL Week 2 slate. And I texted you that morning, like, the Houston Texans plus 12.5 is stealing money. And I felt really good about myself through the first half. Tyrod Taylor killed it. He started off 10 of 11 with how many yards? He had a touchdown, 10 of 11, and oh, geez. I don't know. He started off really well. 10, 11, I want to say 130 yards and a touchdown. Got injured, didn't come out for the second half, and it turned into quite the sweat. I prognosticated Panthers defense pretty good. They're making me look good so far. You know, granted, the Saints have huge question marks in their offense, and they had a whole bunch of missing coaches. We'll talk about them later. But I was high on this defense. I think they're going to have a field day against Davis Mills. He threw 18 passes last week. Has the third highest bad throw percentage at this point. Carolina's got the best defensive EPA per play, number one sack rate, number one pressure rate. And Tyrod Taylor was actually playing like an elite quarterback through six quarters, albeit. Thing is, I'm not going to lay 7.5 on the road with the Panthers. It just feels too square and too presumptive. But what I am going to do is I am going to play this as a teaser leg and get it down below the key number of 3. It's a little square as well. You don't really like to tease road favorites down, but against Davis Mills with this defense, I think they can do enough to win by a field goal.
Yeah, bad job to me on the hosting here. But as you say, Panthers, 7.5-point road favorites here, minus 115 on that. Texans plus 7.5, minus 107. Over-under of 43.5, minus 105 on the over, minus 115 on the under. The thing for the Panthers being able to cover that number for me, you know, with Davis Mills here and how good that Panthers defense has looked through two games, you know, I feel like the back door will be left open all day for Carolina to just run up the score late off of a pick six or fumble Ruski, whatever. I have very little faith in Davis Mills here. Tyrod Taylor has looked good. I really don't know who at the other skill positions is going to step up without him. I mean, I have no faith in that 400 or 500 headed backfield. They're desperate to deploy. I don't see any one of them being able to carry a big enough load to alleviate pressure on Davis Mills and make his NFL debut a successful, or his first NFL start a successful one. I'm on Carolina here. They can win by at least 8, and I think I'm on the under, and that's pretty clearly because the Texans just aren't going to carry their weight, and I don't see Sam Darnold putting up a 40-burger.
Yeah, I feel strong about both those plays, but I feel stronger about teasing each of them. So I don't know. I think the over-under is 43 right now. I have it written down as 43 from earlier in the week. The spread is 7.5, so get up to 49, down to 1.5 for the Panthers. That would be probably the way I look at attacking it if I were to just tease both legs in this spot, but I'm only going to tease the Panthers under 3. A thing that I've been doing real quick, and I'm going to just talk about it throughout several of these games, but I'm breaking down the implied score based on the lines. So the Panthers are projected to score 25.25 points this week versus the Texans, who are projected to score 17. 17.75, I believe, would be the 7.5 right there. Yeah, 17.75. So my thing is, from the preseason line, which was Panthers minus 4, 44.5, the Texans are supposedly going to score, are projected to score 2 points less. My thing is the downgrade from Davis Mills to how Tyrod Taylor was playing and how the Panthers have looked every bit of a part of a defense that's going to progress year over year. I think that number should be lower than 2 point difference, if that makes any sense. So I would look at the Texans team total, honestly, and I don't think they can get in the back door, because the best way for Davis Mills to have positive offensive game script is if they're not behind, because if that defense can pin its ears back, it's going to be trouble. So I'm going to bring up the implied score thing in future games, future handicaps. So I just figured I'd kind of mention it here out the window.
Good. And that's that's enough time on our worst game of the week. Bing, bang, bang. Moving on to Sunday. The Cincinnati Bengals visit the Pittsburgh Steelers in a battle of 1-1 AFC North teams. 1 p.m. Eastern kickoff. Bengals coming off a disappointing, but you know, still kind of a win for them. 2017 loss on the road at the Chicago Bears. The Steelers, just a huge flat-out loss for them. Lost 26-17 in the Heinz Field home opener against the Las Vegas Raiders. The Las Vegas Raiders team, as you touched on, they should have beat because it was a banged-up, injury-ridden Raiders team, most notably Josh Jacobs. Pittsburgh defense, not bad, but Ben Roethlisberger, the offense, struggling after that week one upset of the Buffalo Bills. Against the spread, both teams 1-1, over-under, Cincinnati 1-1, Pittsburgh 0-2, largely because of that defense again, but partially because Ben Roethlisberger might be washed. The odds on this one, where did they go? Bengals plus 3.5, minus 122. Steelers minus 3.5, minus 102. Over under 43.5, again, minus 112 on the over, minus 108 on the under. Bucks expecting a low scoring week in at least some of these dud games. Joe Burrow played Pittsburgh once last year. Did okay. Pittsburgh, betting them from now on is just going to be whether you have any belief that Ben Roethlisberger is capable, right? And now he says he's going to play this week despite what originally seemed to be pretty serious injury. I don't know if we should be on Dwayne Haskins' watch, Mason Rudolph watch. Any insight on the Steelers injuries since you fell victim to the injury card last week?
Well, I definitely think Big Ben's pec injury plays a role. Deontay Johnson has an ankle injury. My big thing about Big Ben in this situation or currently is that he already seems iffy on new offensive coordinator Matt Canada's scheme. He replied to a question post-game this past week about why there are so many 3 and 4 wide receiver sets by saying, ask Matt Canada, kind of throwing him under the bus. And my interpretation of why Pittsburgh is doing that or using more 3 or 4 wide receiver sets is to hide its poor offensive line and Big Ben's arm limitations. So people might think like, wow, heavy wide receiver sets, that would suggest Pittsburgh has more confidence in Big Ben's arm talent or lack there of arm limitation. We'll just leave it at arm talent. That makes more sense. But really, his only value as a quarterback is his ability to read defenses fast and pre-snap. So the idea is if, I would think, you spread out the other defense, he could kind of pick it apart from like shotgun sets, make a quick decision, get the ball out into space to playmakers, whether it be Najee Harris, Juju Smith-Schuster, or Deontay Johnson, who is injured, so they can make some plays after they catch the ball. I like the under here, but I'm going to put it as a teaser leg. I'm going to take it up to 49.5 at this point, I guess, and have it as my second teaser leg. So we're getting some reverse line movement in Seattle and Cincy's direction. 75% of the handle is on Pittsburgh, but it's gone from like a 7-point favorite. It was 6 in the preseason, opened at 6 or 7, and it's already down to, like you said, 3.5. Why I really like Cincinnati's defense in this situation, first of all, they're underrated. They're 8th in defensive EPA per play, 4th in success rate. And there's a huge comp between Minnesota and Pittsburgh's offenses. Minnesota was Cincy's week one opponent. Both have statue quarterbacks behind weak offensive lines with above average wide receivers, dynamic running backs. But Cincy did pretty good against that defense or that offense, and I think that offense is actually a lot better than Pittsburgh's offense. Why I'm staying away from the Bengals as a side is because they did lose 36-10 last year with Joe Burrow in the lineup to Pittsburgh. And we saw what Chicago's defense did to the Bengals last week and just mauled Joe Burrow. I think this Pittsburgh defense is top 3 in my mind, and I think they could cause the same amount of like turnovers and get short fields for their offense. And maybe they cover the 7 in like a 17-10 game. But I have this low scoring. I mean, the defense, Pittsburgh's defense is going to make up for their weak offense. They know they need to. And they both play a below average pace. Cincinnati is 27th in total pace. So I actually like the under in this one, but I'm going to tease it because, again, the under in this game on the preseason was 47. Right now it's 43.5. So the line is moving the appropriate way. That's why I'm going to take the 6 points the other direction. So that's what I like. Teaser leg number 2 for me.
Another 1 o'clock game, the 1-1 Chicago Bears at the 1-1 Cleveland Browns. Bears coming off a 2017 home win over the Bengals. Browns, they beat the Texans 31-21 at home. This is the NFL starting debut of Bears rookie QB Justin Fields. Goes up against a healthy Baker Mayfield and Cleveland. The Browns are 6.5-point home favorites, so that number is down from the big number correctly predicted by you as a too big of a number last week. 6.5 seems much more manageable, minus 122 on that, minus 102 for the Bears at plus 6.5. Over under 45.5 seems a little low at first look. We know the Browns offense can score. Jarvis Landry out, but Odell Beckham Jr. in. Backfield, obviously fantastic. Baker Mayfield's look good. And Justin Fields, whatever you necessarily may think about Andy Dalton, probably an upgrade at least for ceiling of possible point production. I really like the over in this game. I think I like the Browns to win by 7. Are you on the Justin Fields train, or do you have any hope in the rest of that Bears offense or defense even on the road?
Yeah, I have here in my notes that I lean to the Browns or the Bears if Fields played, but I liked him if Dalton played. I just haven't seen enough out of this Browns defense for them to lay full 7. I guess it's 6.5 on Tipico, so that's obviously a much better number, but it's also like kind of a more concerning number, right? Like what? I don't know, rookie quarterback or a banged up Dalton. Now it's officially a rookie quarterback. All the money's coming in on the Browns, but we're getting reverse line movement. It opened at 9.5, according to one thing that I have. It definitely opened at 7 or 7.5, and it's already ticking down to 6.5. There's so much money on the under, which is what brought this number down a little bit. I understand the money on the under, just because Chicago is 26 in pace of play and the Browns are dead last. I don't anticipate the Bears playing faster with Justin Fields under center unless they're down significantly and they have to play catch up. But I think their defense can keep them in there. Dalton was actually higher graded by PFF than Mayfield, so he was playing a little bit better, and I do think it is a pretty big downgrade from Dalton to a rookie quarterback. Not long term, but just in this game. And Tyrod Taylor, like I said, his first half against Cleveland's defense was sick. 10 for 11, 125 yards and a touchdown. Cleveland's defense gets mediocre pressure. Bears at least have Jason Peters at left tackle to go toe-to-toe with Myles Garrett. My caveat is the Bears just covered and the Browns just lost against the spread. So I don't know. I don't want to I feel like it's too square to just roll with the Bears again and bet the Browns to lose straight up or lose against the spread again. So I'm going to pass on this one.
Okay. Moving on then to Chargers at the Chiefs, both teams 1-1. Although the Chargers coming off a 2017 loss last week at home against the Dallas Cowboys, Chiefs went on the road and lost 36-35 at the Baltimore Ravens. It was Patrick Mahomes' first career loss in 4 games head-to-head against Lamar Jackson. The Chargers are 1-1 ATS. The Chiefs are 0-2. Chargers 0-2 over-under, and the Chiefs are 2-0 to the over. Chiefs back. Bucks are back on the horse with Kansas City. Their favorite again here. 6.5-point home favorites, minus 115. Chargers plus 6.5, minus 107. Over under 54.5, minus 115 on the over, minus 105 on the under. Chargers looked pretty good in week one, win over Washington. And they weren't able to do much on the offensive side against a Cowboys team missing DeMarcus Lawrence. That was a big reason why you got off of Dallas. You made a lot of Chargers endorsements. I had Dallas. No, I myself got off of Dallas as well. I offered it up on the show, then crossed it out. Mad regrets, but do we have hope for Justin Herbert on the road here against Kansas City? This obviously where he played, or his first NFL game was against the Chiefs last year, that short notice start, filling in for Tyrod Taylor, took the Chiefs to overtime. They do that again, they probably cover here. Or do we know too much about Justin Herbert? Does Andy Reid know too much about Justin Herbert? And can the Chiefs cover 6.5?
I like how you put that. I actually think this is probably a fake sharp play to take the Chargers. I'm very nervous about the Chargers in this spot. It's a fishy KC line. People are picking up on the fact that the Chiefs play close games. They lose against the spread against they lost against the spread against two quality opponents already. I think they're 1-11 against the spread in their last 12 games. LA covered both games in 2020 against KC. One was for Herbert's first start, which was a huge surprise, obviously. I think they were laying or getting 7.5, but they were at home. And then the last game was the Chargers just smoking Kansas City in week 17 because Kansas City sat all their starters. But it feels like the Chiefs at -6.5 against this LA team that was getting over money on its regular season win totals, it feels like a fishy line, right? And it feels like Chargers are going to be a trendy underdog by kickoff. My thing is LA had the sixth worst week two by DVOA. They had a below average offensive grade versus a very bad Dallas defense. I didn't like what I saw in the red zone or crunch time plays from LA. And like, if we're being honest, how much different did Brandon Staley and his offense, have they looked through 2 weeks than Anthony Lynn and his offense last year? Like, they're moving the ball, right? The Chargers are moving the ball really well. They're good on third down, but they're not buttoned up situationally. They have the fourth most penalties per game through 2 weeks. And they're just not getting home. They're not reaching pay dirt. They get 5.9 yards per play. This is LA's offense, which is above average, but they have the fifth worst points per play. LA's rush defense is third worst in success rate, and I think if KC can run the ball, they're going to dictate the pace. And honestly, I'm nervous about the 6.5, right? It feels like too much. I mean, could they make an example out of the Chargers? I'm talking about KC. You got a rookie head coach versus Andy Reid. And if you're not buttoned up, is there a worse coaching staff to play than Andy Reid's? Maybe, probably not. I mean, maybe Bill Belichick, but that's the conversation we're talking about. My caveat to it's a heavy lean on the Chiefs. And right now I have it as my fifth ranked play. So it might be on my card. My caveat is, if I'm being honest, am I butthurt about LA not covering in week two? I mean, they did get screwed by some crappy officiating. There were terrible calls down the stretch that cost them that game. So I don't want to hold that too much against them. I don't know. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm less concerned about some of that than I am about putting up 17 points on a Dallas Cowboys defense that we know is bad, right? It was god-awful all of 2020. It was horrendous in week one against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Chargers put up 17 points against them with Justin Herbert reigning off of the rookie of the year. You know, how good they looked against a much stronger Washington defense in week one. You know, 17 points last week at home. Just that has to be off of them for a while. And then you go to KC, as you mentioned, you know, they bounce back very well, whether that be Andy Reid-led or Mahomes-led. 40-32 loss at home to the Las Vegas Raiders in week five last year, came back out and stomped the Buffalo Bills 26-17 on the road in week six. I think this is a good bounce back spot for them. And we know that they have no issue making a statement against inferior teams. And, you know, this is also an opportunity to spoil any hope of the Chargers of being a potential AFC West contender.
All right. So yeah, I'm leaning towards the Chiefs minus 6.5.
Okay, that'll be a take for me. I'm going on to Cardinals at Jaguars. A lot of people highly anticipating a Kyler Murray, doesn't need a coming out party, but more of a statement even, solidifying himself as an early season MVP contender, perhaps. The Cardinals are 7.5-point road favorites, but only minus 105 on that, minus 120 on the Jaguars to stay within a touchdown. 51.5 is the total with a little bit of juice at minus 112 on the over. Cardinals 2-0, Jags 0-2. Jags, more than 0-2, just look completely lost. Trevor Lawrence not looking the part of a number one overall pick, as fantastic as he was in his entire college career at Clemson. Cardinals look fantastic, even with a 34-33 nail biter over Minnesota last week. Against the spread, Arizona is 1-1, failed to cover last week. Jaguars are 0-2. Haven't come particularly close. Both teams are 1-1 against the over-under, largely because Jacksonville is struggling to score points. That's why they're not there. Kyler Murray is the star of this game. They're a rightful 7.5-point favorites. You've been on or standing by Urban Meyer more than Trevor Lawrence, perhaps, so far through 2 weeks. Are you sticking on that side, or are you ready to jump ship?
I'm not going to jump ship. I did use my Jacksonville bullet in week two, and I feel like I should hang low for a few weeks, see how this team progresses or regresses. But like, God damn it. It takes guts to bet a team that you just lost with the very next week. And I really want to pull the trigger again. Might end up talking myself into it. 7.5 is a lot. There is a weather advantage, the Florida weather factor, which I'll talk about here in a second with my play that I actually do like in this game. I do have a play. But I'm still not sold on Cliff Kingsbury as a coach, and I'm not selling my stock on Urban Meyer through 2 weeks. I can't say anything good about him, so I'm not going to even try, but it is 2 weeks. I think it'll get better. I'm on the over here. And this is a pros versus Joes game. There's 88% of the money is on the under. And a slight majority of the tickets are on the over. So I'm following the public on this one. And I'm fading the sharps. Here's my thing. We're getting reverse line movement. 88% of the money is on the under. The total has went from 51 to 52, right? Now, I just mentioned the Florida weather factor. Florida teams since 2016 in the month of September, when it's traditionally hotter and more humid in Florida in comparison to their visitors, Florida teams are 19-10 over to the under in September games since 2016. And how I interpret that is that the defenses probably get gassed in the second half. Also, a bigger reason why I like that spot, or I like that wrinkle or angle on this game itself, is that both these teams play at an above average pace. Actually, Jacksonville plays the fastest. They have the fastest seconds per play in the NFL. And Arizona is, hold on, let me pull this up. AZ is 14th in neutral situation pace. So if this game plays out how the line suggests, which is Cardinals are going to win easily, there's going to be a lot of garbage time, I think, for Meyer to work out some offensive tricks or to try to get in the back door. I'm going to take the over 52. I like it. I also think that there's been an overreaction to Arizona's defense. I'm not sold that they're good yet. They look good in the first week. They gave up a whole bunch of points to Minnesota last week, shut down Tennessee in week one. I think the Jacksonville's offensive line actually grades out pretty well. I think they're going to hold up. They're going to give Trevor Lawrence the ability to get the ball down the field. I think they're going to be able to run against the Arizona Cardinals defense, which is also going to open up some passing lanes. And I could see this game being like 35-24 Arizona. So I'm staying away because I do think Jacksonville could get in the back door and, you know, this is just a spot ripe to fade the public. But I'm going to stay away from the total or the side. I like over 52. Following the public. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm with you there as well. I'll follow all of you. Over 51.5 is the play. And yeah, it's just too big for a Cardinals team. As you say, they get into high-scoring shootouts and kind of just trust themselves, Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury. You know, they just default to, we're going to just outscore you. And they, you know, they don't run out the clock or slow it down to preserve a big lead. You know, they're just going to keep going out, keep slinging. And yeah, third game for Trevor Lawrence. Maybe this is it. Urban Meyer, you know, we'll see.
The door
to USC remains open.
They're just not the type of team that's like, all right, well, we're up 35-7. Let's just run halfback dives the second half. They're just going to keep trying to score. So, whatever.
Yeah. Next one, Washington football team, Taylor Heinicke, 1-1 against Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen back on track with a 35-0 win last week, although that was probably more the fault of the Miami Dolphins than full credit to Buffalo. A big statement in a road divisional game after their week one loss. Washington 30-29 win on Thursday Night Football in a battle of NFC East contenders at MetLife Stadium. Oh, against the spread, Washington is 0-2. Buffalo is 1-1. Washington 1-1 over under. 0-2 for Buffalo, the high scoring Buffalo Bills from a year ago. Bills are again 7.5-point home favorites. -115 odds, +7.5, -107 for Washington, coming in as a road underdog. Buffalo back. They looked it last week, although Tua Tagovailoa got hurt. Everything that could go wrong went wrong for Miami. Not a whole lot of impressive stat lines on the Buffalo side, but they are returning to home 1-1 after a really bad week one loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers team that we found out last week wasn't that good after all. So I'm on Buffalo, I think, to solidify a statement here against a playoff team from 2020 and a potential 2021 contender. I think we finally see the offensive fireworks from Josh Allen and co.
So you're playing the Bills?
Yeah. Whew.
Good luck, buddy. I like the Washington football team here. This line opened at 8.5. It's been bet down. Typical heads at 7.5 right now, right?
Yes.
So we have reverse line movement. All the money is coming on the Bills. I'm assuming the market feels pretty similarly to you. They're just waiting for that Buffalo Bills breakout game. What I'm gathering is that the market and people that are backing the Bills here are willing to write off their poor offensive performances, because let's make one thing clear. Buffalo's offense has been dog shit through 2 weeks. Now, we can excuse it what they played Pittsburgh. Perfect sense. Tough division game on the road against Miami, hot Florida. Okay, fair enough. Also, Tua got down injured, so why do they have to put any like offense on game film if you know you're going to cruise to a win? I get you. I hear that. But Washington gets extra prep. Again, you have the reverse line movement. And Josh Allen, we've seen at this point, it's fourth season of Josh Allen. We've seen more bad Josh Allen than good Josh Allen. I'm not going to go and say anything ridiculous like his 2020 was a fluke. I'm actually a believer in Josh Allen. I think he's a franchise quarterback, but he hasn't looked very good through against two good defenses through the first 3 weeks. I'd still consider Washington a good defense. I think they're a little overrated coming into the season. Josh Allen has the sixth highest pressure rate. Washington's defense has the seventh highest pressure rate. So like, it hasn't been clean pockets for Josh Allen. He has a lower DVOA, QBR, EPA plus completion over expectation kabaza and PFF grade than Taylor Heinicke, I think that's how you pronounce it. And just plainly, nothing we've seen under the Bills suggests they should be a 1 point bigger favorite off the preseason line. The preseason line was 7.5, and they opened at 8.5. It's back down to what the preseason line was, but again, Bills offense just not very good. And granted, you could chalk it up to playing good defenses, but 26th in DVOA, 21st in EPA, 27th in success rate. That's not a team that I want to back. 7.5 and Heinicke looked good. I don't know. And like, if we're being fair about the rosters, outside a quarterback, how much more talented is the Bills than Washington? Because I mean, Terry McLaurin, damn near all pro talent. Antonio Gibson, better running back than the Bills have. Bills offensive lines look a little shaky. Granted, again, bad good playing against good defenses. Washington's offensive line looks good, right? Their defense has been a little shaky, but again, Bills offensive line. You have Chase Young, who is going to be able to pin his ears back. The Bills, they love to pass it. They'll just tell you essentially, hey, we're going to throw it. I don't know if you want Chase Young knowing that he has to pin his ears back. I'll take the 8.5. You have the backdoor cover opportunity. You have Washington, who's not that much less talented than Buffalo. I think it's a good number. I'm going to take it to the window with me as well.
Yeah, the strength of that Washington defense is definitely at the front, and Chase Young's the focal point. The secondary is exposable, though, and I think Josh Allen is the guy who can expose it, and that's the way for him to get back on track, for that entire Bills offense to get back on track. You know, this is his first opportunity of the season, really, to dial up some deep throws. As long as he has just enough time, I think he can do some pretty quick strike damage against Washington's secondary. So I'm going to stick with my Bills pick. Minus 7.5. Baltimore at Detroit. The 1-1 Ravens against the 0-2 and very much 0-2 Detroit Lions. Ravens off of that 36-35 Monday night thriller over the Chiefs. No, Sunday night. Sorry. Excuse me. And Detroit off of a 35-17 loss on Monday Night Football against the Green Bay Packers. Detroit came out hot, looked good the first few drives, the first quarter, the first half. And then things quickly fell apart. But they showed they can hang and, you know, get out to good starts. They've done that a couple times now. And then Baltimore, they look down and out against KC. Big, big comeback. They're back on the road here as rightful favorites. Minus 8.5 against the Lions team. That is 1-1 against the spread. You had them to cover in week one, and they did against the San Francisco 49ers, albeit in very backdoor fashion. And then, you know, they had the front door cover against the Packers, if you will, and then just completely fell apart in the second half. Both teams 2-0 against the over-under, so gotta lean toward the over 50.5 here. That Lions defense hasn't looked very good. Credit Jared Goff. He has been quite good for that Lions team, keeping them in contention for parts of games anyway. But I think we can go. I'm going to go with, 8.5 is a more manageable number. I'm going to go with the Ravens and the over.
The market's going that way too, and I have no disagreement with that one. I would rather follow than fade the market in this spot. My thing is, the back door could be wide open. Detroit feels like it has so much backdoor potential because Goff is suited for domes. The opponents probably aren't going to take them that seriously, so they'll let up on the gas in the second half, as we saw with the San Francisco game. And Baltimore's defense is a little banged up. You know, they didn't look so good against Kansas City. There's not, you know, I'm not going to knock them too much for that, but I mean, the Raiders' offense looked pretty good, and like, everyone knew Derek Carr was throwing the ball, right? So they're a one-dimensional offense that Baltimore's defense really couldn't stop. So I could see the back door being open. I do lean to the over as well. But how I'm going to play this is, again, shop around. But I'm going to tease the Ravens down through the key number of 3. I get it at 2.5, I think. Because, I mean, they should cover the spread. They just beat the crap out of bad teams that are getting a lot of points against them. They actually cover those big numbers. But I just feel better and safer removing the backdoor possibility and just getting the Ravens on a teaser leg. And as you've surely noticed, or I'm assuming the listeners have noticed, this is a big teaser weekend. There's a lot going on here. There's a lot of advantage teaser plays, and this one doesn't fall into the Wong teasers because it's a road favorite, but again, for all the aforementioned reasons, I'm going to play the Ravens on the teaser leg, and I'll wrap it up as to how in my going to the window segment, or an arc going to the window segment, but that's the way I'm going to attack the Ravens in the spot.
The only thing teasing me about this next one is the possibility of not watching it. That's the 0-2 Atlanta Falcons at the 0-2 New York Giants. Both teams very much 0-2. Although the Giants were in a 30-29 nail biter against Washington, they lost it. Atlanta hung around, surprisingly hung around against Tampa Bay last week before falling 48-25. A pair of late-ish pick sixes from QB Matt Ryan. Atlanta's just a mess. Arthur Smith not making any immediate change there. Atlanta also 0-2 against the spread. They were favored in week one against the Philadelphia Eagles and then just embarrassed themselves. Giants are 1-1, both against the spread and over-under. Atlanta also 1-1 over-under. Giants favored at home, minus 2.5, minus 130. A lot of vig on that side. Atlanta plus 2.5, plus 105. Plus 125 on the money line, total 47.5 here, minus 115 on the under, minus 105. So bookmakers like a low scoring Giants win. Tough to disagree. I have little hope in anything we've seen from the Falcons. Giants defense wasn't as good as we thought it was last week. That Atlanta offensive line, though, still very much as bad or worse than we know it to be. I'm on your Giants minus 2.5.
Yeah, I mean, I would play the Giants at -2.5 before I did anything with this game. The thing, I mean, the Falcons, there's really nothing good to say about them through 2 weeks. I'm not overreacting to anything, right? I'm just calling it like it is. They really have played poorly on both sides of the ball, on all sides of the ball. It's like the 2016, 2020 election. Like, you're not really voting for someone, you're voting against someone. Like, that's the argument for the Falcons. Well, the Giants are terrible. Okay. But conversely, the argument for the Giants, well, the Falcons are terrible. So, the Giants being at home with extra prep, and like, if we knew what kind of Daniel Jones we're getting, like, it would be a much easier bet, right? If we get the one from last week, they're going to crush the Falcons. Like, Daniel Jones graded out really well last week, was his against the Washington football team, was his second best performance of his career as a Giants fan. I can say that very confidently. His best was his first start against Tampa Bay, where they put up like 30-something points against Tampa Bay. So, I mean, if I were to play it in any way, it'd be the Giants, but I'm not excited because, again, it's more of just like, well, the Falcons are terrible. Daniel Jones was good that one time. Like, I don't know. It's not strong. It's not a sharp take.
No, it's very much a just default to the Giants being better rested and being at home and being in a closer game last week, whereas the Falcons just, all they did was show how quickly they can lose themselves a game in horrifying fashion. Yeah, I would have way more interest in Falcons plus 125 on the money line than going near the spread, but Giants minus 130 to win by three has to be the de facto play at the very least, just because of the two inherent advantages in this one against a bad team. Another 1 o'clock game. Oh,
yeah. For what it's worth, the sharp side of the market's on the under, the public is on the over. There's more money on the Falcons and more tickets on the Falcons, but it looks like if anything, it's inching towards the Giants, the line. So maybe a little reverse line movement just to kind of button up the Giants Falcons, which we've spent too much time talking about.
Yep. Put the nail on that one. The Indianapolis Colts 0-2 at the AFC South rival Tennessee Titans, who are 1-1 and coming off of a thrilling 33-30 overtime win at the Seattle Seahawks. Meanwhile, Carson Wentz and the Colts lost 27-24 at Rams. However, they did cover. They were 3.5-point underdogs in that one. I remember because I had Rams minus 3.5. Colts still only 1-1 against the spread. Tennessee, same over under both teams 1-1. The Titans off of a good game last week against a much better team than the Colts. They are 5.5 point home favorites now, -108, +5.5, -112 for the Colts at typical sportsbook. Over under of 48.5, a little bit of big on the under at -112, -108 on the over. Tennessee, are they back? Ryan Tannehill still not looking great, but Julio Jones made a statement last week. AJ Brown still very much there. Derrick Henry coming off of a fantastic game, and everyone knows how much he likes to string those together. The Colts, Carson Wentz, may just not be very good. He is also now more hurt than he was coming into the season with two bad ankles. -5.5 at home. That's fine for me against the Colts defense that so far hasn't been as good as maybe we expected, although those standards were pretty high. The talent's still there. They can get it together, but I just don't know if the offense with a flailing Carson Wentz can keep them off the field very long and keep them rested enough to contain a team with the weapons of Tennessee.
Oh, man, I whiffed on the Colts last week. I actually, if you remember during the podcast, I said I leaned to the Colts getting plus points at home against the Rams, and I liked them on a teaser. And then not only did I go back on that because of the injury report stuff, but I ended up betting the Rams so much. I ended up talking myself into the Rams. I should have mentioned this before when we were talking about the Ravens. Same thing. We talked about that one. I was on the Ravens. Then the injury report scared me and ended up just staying away from it. I don't want to say easy winners. The Colts should have been a much easier winner. They failed to convert on two red zone attempts in the first quarter against the Rams, but they did cover for bettors or for Colts backers. If anything on this game, I lean to the under. Thing is, I actually have to write this for sportsbookwire.usatoday.com tomorrow. And as someone who just gambles on this stuff and follows it for those purposes, I'm still like exhausted at Carson Wentz and this whole injury stuff. Like I can only imagine what it's like being a fan of this dude and their teams. Like, this is just, it's terrible. He's probably gonna play. Like, if I were to bet this any which way, I would just take the Colts in anticipation that he's gonna play, and hope that the 5.5 holds up. And if when he gets announced, like, it'll probably drop to 3.5, and maybe I just hedge or buy out a little bit or try to get a middle. I don't know, but I lean to the under because it's the sharp side. Both teams play at a bottom 10 pace. Both offenses are bottom 10 in success rate and EPA per play. Indianapolis is 25th in points per play. Tennessee's 26th. If Jacob Eason starts, it's going to be a pretty muted or dull offensive script for the Colts. And if Jacob Eason plays, I could just see the Titans be like, you know what? Let's just run it all day and get out of here 24-13, right? I mean, why would they put anything on film if it's just like, hey, we'll see how we'll run halfback dives, we'll see if the quarterback's any good. Oh, what? He's not good? All right, let's just continue to run halfback dives, right? I mean, it could go that way. So I lean to the under, and again, like, it is, I guess, the sharp side. 90% of the money is on the under, but 53% of the tickets. So, granted, this total opened at 52.5, and it sounded like, I think, 48.5, you said, on Tipico. So we are getting to the party a little late, but that's the reason for the lean. I'd feel much better about it if it was still in the 50s.
Yeah, I don't mind the angle of waiting and hoping that Carson Wentz is active, going to play, and then betting the Titans at a better number then, because I think the general population would overreact to Carson Wentz playing being a better thing for the Colts than it would be in that situation. He's not healthy. He's nowhere close to healthy. I have very little hope in that team. And as I said, defense hasn't been strong enough to take any burden off of the offense. They still need to score points. And Tennessee proved themselves a little bit last week. I still think Ryan Tannehill's best is yet to come, and at home is a very good spot for it. Jameis Winston and the 1-1 New Orleans Saints visit Bill Belichick, Mac Jones, and the 1-1 New England Patriots. The Patriots off of a, you know, convincing, I guess, 25-6 win at the New York Jets. Four sacks, four interceptions of Zach Wilson. The Saints, embarrassing 26-7 loss at the Carolina Panthers, coming off of their neutral site domination of the Green Bay Packers in week one. Both teams are 1-1 against the spread, and both are 0-2 over-under. The Patriots are 2.5-point home favorites, -130, +105 for the Saints on the other side of that, and over-under of 42.5. Seems very low, but both teams having trouble hitting the number this year. The Saints, for two very different reasons. Their defense was great week one. The offense struggled mightily last week. And Patriots, you know, held Zach Wilson and the Jets to absolutely nothing last week. The Saints were the best team the Patriots have played, probably. New England, the worst the Saints have played, maybe. The Saints as a road underdog here at +122. Tempting. I know you're a supporter of Jameis Winston, but you're also a big Bill Belichick fan, as most are. Is he going to be able to scheme up a plan to work against the improved vision of Jameis Winston and, you know, basically copy what the Carolina Panthers were able to do last week?
Well, going back to the previous performances of the Saints, that's like my biggest factor or note here in my handicap. I'm on the Saints plus the points. I think it's 2.5 at Tipico, you said?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, it's trading at 2.5. I wouldn't hate it as a teaser leg. Again, I've said teaser too many times, though. And I do need to, you know, build a card for my five best plays, and this is one of them. You know, New Orleans crushed Green Bay in week one, 38-3, and they were demolished in week two, 26-7 by the Panthers. The truth is somewhere in the middle, right? And I think the middle was appropriately priced in the preseason when this game was a pick'em. Now, it's moved up to -3 because of all the noise with popular Boston sports fans and the volatility of the Saints play. You know, it's kind of sent the market in a tizzy. But if you're going to give me a field goal, like, why do the rules of a rookie quarterback versus a good coach cease here? Like, everyone's clinging to Bill Belichick versus turnover-prone Jameis Winston and how good Belichick's defense looked against Tua, who's shaky, and Zach Wilson, who plays with a bunch of nobodies and for the Jets. And obviously Belichick and the Patriots own them. But, like, doesn't Sean Payton, to an extent, offset Jameis Winston's weaknesses? And also, it's a coaching staff that can feast on a rookie quarterback, you know? Does he know nothing about defense because Sean Payton's an offensive guy? I don't believe that's the case here. And I think that he has the ability to shut down a rookie quarterback just as much, or not as much as Bill Belichick, but, you know, he's a veteran coach. Also, the Saints were without eight coaches last week because of COVID stuff. They looked disorganized, right? Yeah, it was an embarrassing loss, but they played a good Panthers defense. And just like you can't overreact to the Saints in week one, which I didn't. I really liked them. I was thinking about playing them. Ended up staying away from it altogether. Ended up cashing a ticket on their under between the Panthers and the Saints. But, like, I'm not going to overreact to this. And like I said, the truth is somewhere in the middle on this one. And I could see this game ending 21-20, right? One way or the other. And I'll take the points. It's just too much Belichick love. Like it's just blind faith. Like, hey, I think I'll take blind faith as Sean Payton plus points. Let's do that one.
Yeah, the Saints look so good in week one. You just gotta kind of ignore a little bit what happened last week against the divisional opponent. And yeah, the Sean Payton not getting enough credit here going up against the rookie quarterback and Mac Jones, who, again, didn't look great in week one. Moving on to the 4 o'clock slate here, but another word from Tipico Sportsbook, global sports betting leader that's now live in New Jersey and Colorado. Make your favorite sports more interesting with Tipico's fast and easy mobile sportsbook app. For a limited time, new users from this podcast will enjoy a special welcome bonus. Terms and conditions apply. Ages 21 and up. See site for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER for New Jersey. 1-800-522-4700 for Colorado. Get your bonus today at usatodaybet.com/podcast. That's usatodaybet.com/podcast. And we move into the 4 o'clock slate. The New York Jets and Zach Wilson, who we just tore up, visit Denver Broncos, which is not a great matchup for him, was the share of the league lead in interceptions. Broncos looking very good, 2-0, making me look like a fool for doubting their low futures odds at the start of the year. Should have stuck with the bookmakers on that. The Jets, though, we were all right about them at 0-2. 26-6 loss last week. The Broncos beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 23-13. Denver also 2-0 against the spread because they're putting up points, and it's not just defense there. Teddy Bridgewater looking good as the number one quarterback. Jets 0-2, continuing to just get blown out every week. 0-2 over under because they're not putting up points. Denver also 0-2 over under, and Denver is a 10.5 point home favorite. Minus 115 for the Jets to cover, though. Minus 107 for the home team. Low total of 41.5 with minus 117 on the under, minus 103 on the over. So the books here, you're talking about projected scores based on these odds. We're looking at a 25-15 game for the Broncos, and tough to like anything more than that, 25-14. Jets just can't score touchdowns, and I don't see that Zach Wilson breakout coming against this Broncos defense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to pass. The only way I would play it would be the Jets plus 11, just because I think this game finishes in the 6 to 8 point margin more times than not. Denver's defense is actually 25th in pressure rate. So maybe Zach Wilson can stay upright enough to not make critical mistakes, and enough so to the Jets plus 11 cashes, and you have a decent offensive line to shoot Zach Wilson a little bit of bail here. So here are the best pass defenses by quarterback rating. Number one is the New England Patriots. That was Zach Wilson's week two opponent. Number two is the Carolina Panthers. That's Zach Wilson's week one opponent. Number three is the Denver Broncos. Like, just a brutal stretch for our rookie quarterback, who is at the bottom of pretty much every rankings, quarterback rankings, like, chart. Whether it be PFF, DVOA, EPA, all of them, right? But he doesn't have much of a chance. There's not a lot of help around him. Probably not a great scheme. I don't know much of the scheme, but Vic Fangio and a Denver defense should be as difficult for Zach Wilson and the Jets as Belichick and the Pats and Carolina's defense. So, I mean, Denver's defense got all pro talent on every level. The only thing is, like, I love Teddy Two Gloves getting points. Laying 11. I don't know. He looks great. He does. He looks great. But, you know, I'm not out on the Jets' defense. They're neck and neck with Denver's defense and EPA and success rate. So maybe they do enough. Maybe their offense gets a little bit lucky. I could see this game ending, you know, 24-17. I know that's right on the total number, but I don't know. I don't see a lot of value in the 11, even as a huge Teddy Bridgewater and Denver supporter. So that's where I'm at.
Is the Jets defense maybe good enough to keep this close? They only gave up 26 points last week, despite 4 interceptions and 4 sacks. So that's not bad.
Right.
And against, you know, not a quick strike Denver Broncos offense by any means. Yeah.
Missing the number one wide receiver. So yeah.
Right. Yeah, and a team that, you know, would love to just run this out for the entire second half if they can while at home. Yeah, I've got to go with the Jets plus 10.5, I think. That's a very big number. And some improvement from Zach Wilson, perhaps.
Do you want to be the guy Dolphins holding a Jets ticket, though? That's the only thing.
No, never. Never. not once in my life.
It's just they make Miami a good Dolphins enough case just to pass for me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they're once again the case they were all of last season, where, hey, prove me wrong when I have no piece of it whatsoever. The Miami Dolphins 1-1 against a Las Vegas Raiders team that proved me wrong last week to move to 2-0. 4:05 p.m. kickoff at the Death Star. Miami off the 35 loss to Buffalo. Jacoby Brissett now going to be starting for the injured Tua Tagovailoa. The Raiders won 26-17 in a hostile environment at Heinz Field. Big, big game for Derek Carr and John Gruden. That team not looking bad at all. The Dolphins 1-1 ATS. Raiders 2-0. Miami 0-2 over under. Raiders 1-1. And the Raiders are 3.5-point home favorites with the big at -115. Total of 45.5 points, -112 on the over. Jacoby Brissett has starting experience, albeit with the Indianapolis Colts, but he proved that he can be a quarterback to go 8-8 and win games that he should win and then not win games that he wasn't supposed to win. Raiders look good. I think I'm getting caught up in the Las Vegas hype. Teams look good for 2 weeks, and without Josh Jacobs last week and just controlling a game against the Steelers, I'm back on the Raiders at -3.5. That's a smaller number than I'd expect in a return home off of a big win against a team with a backup quarterback.
So I tweeted out, the Raiders is another play that just killed me. I was all about the Raiders last week, and then their injury report scared me off. They're just cluster injuries. I tweeted out the morning of week two at Sunday, Raiders are the sharp play. Everyone knows it. It's just their goddamn injuries that I can't overlook. Another just easy winner. And I mean, we've been talking football this whole offseason. I'm not overreacting to Raiders being good right now because I thought they would be pretty good. Like we talked, I thought they were going to be pretty good. I took them against the Ravens in week one. I really liked him against the Steelers last week. Here's my thing, dude. This is NFL gambling, if you will, actually. I mean, everyone's going to be on the Raiders, right? Vegas beat Pittsburgh. They beat Baltimore. What's the like about the Dolphins? Jacoby Brissett back up. Tua wasn't that good when he was in there. I mean, no one's going to the window with Miami here. But, like, it's time for the Raiders to come back down to earth a little bit, or at least not cover. Brian Flores, I love John Gruden. Brian Flores is a better coach than John Gruden. The Dolphins are 9-4 against the spread with a +7.3 spread differential as road dogs since Brian Flores took over in 2019. And actually, Miami has the best cover rate since 2019 in all games. I mean, the Raiders are pretty one-dimensional, right? They have the fifth highest pass rate, worst yards per rush. They have a beat-up offensive line with Richie Incognito and the rookie Alex Leatherwood, both questionable. And this is why you pay Xavien Howard the big bucks. He's going to cut off a half of the field, right? You know the Raiders want to pass it. You know they want to throw it to Darren Waller. Brian Flores, just like Bill Belichick, comes from that tree, is going to make the Raiders beat them without Darren Waller touching the ball. They're going to figure out a way to scheme Darren Waller out of that game, whether they put two on him, chip him at the line, whatever, and Xavien Howard could just take off the other half side of the field for the Vegas Raiders offense. It's a lot of, like, theory, but I'm taking the Dolphins at plus points. I mean, everyone knew Tua was going to be injured. Everyone knew it. And the house put up a line anyways. Like, I think it's off the board technically. When it goes back, it's going to be the same number, right? Tua and Jacoby is pretty much the same according to the market. And I'll just ride with Brian Flores and the Raiders coming back down to earth. I'll take the Dolphins plus the points here.
To go against that possible letdown spot, though, I'm going to look at it as the Raiders. They were neck and neck with the Dolphins, and both teams missing out on a wild card berth last year. You know, a guy like John Gruden perhaps remembers that and realizes, hey, it's only week three, but this is the team we need to beat, the team that we could be fighting again late in the season. 3.5, it is just so manageable. I get it's possibly a trap, but come on, Raiders. You know, I'll believe it when I see it. If somebody's going to stop Darren Waller, yeah, Xavien Howard could be that guy. But you know, it's about time we get a Henry Ruggs game Or remember when Bryan Edwards was touted as the greatest combination of receivers to ever play the game?
Oh, here's the thing. What if Miami just sells out in the blitz in the first quarter? Because Derek Carr is questionable. He's got MRI on his ankle. His status is actually up in the air. Marcus Mariota is on the injured reserve. That makes the quarterback, if Derek Carr goes down, Nathan Peterman.
Oh, no.
You know? Will Fuller comes back. Will Fuller always misses time, but when he plays, when he's on the field, the offense improves, right? If you can add a wide receiver to take the top off of a defense, it's going to open up things for the offense. So those are the other things I just want to throw in your ear. You know, I'm not – you take the Raiders, best of luck, but you'd be fading me.
All right. The Seattle Seahawks at 1-1 visit the Minnesota Vikings at 0-2. Both teams off of heartbreaking losses last week. The Vikings fell 34-33 at the Arizona Cardinals, and the Seahawks lost 33-30 in overtime at home against the Tennessee Titans. Both teams 1-1 against the spread. Seattle 1-1 over-under. Minnesota is 2-0. Minnesota is a plus 1.5 home underdog, minus 110 on both sides. Seahawks 1.5-point road favorites. 55.5 points is the projected total, with minus 105 on the over, minus 115 on the under. Even money bet for the Vikings to win straight up as underdogs here at plus 100. Vikings, are they due? That's kind of my just handicap here. Two very narrow, close losses. Bengals team, they probably should have beaten their favorite on the road, and then hung tight against a Cardinals team who everyone raves about how good they are offensively. Minnesota scored one less point on the road. But Seattle, see, this is why I hate betting Seattle. And we go through this each and every year. You know, they look great in week one, and then it just completely goes out the window at an unpredictable time. And then just kind of the rest of the season, you're counting on, yeah, but they are good. I don't know. Kirk Cousins, come on. He played Seattle tight last year in a primetime spot. I'm going to go with Minnesota as a home dog here. Plus 100 money line bet on the Vikings for me.
I don't hate it, my brother. Real quick, backing up to the previous Raiders thing, just because I got this notification. Raiders coach John Gruden said Derek Carr was full today in practice, or full go, so he's ready to go against the Dolphins. So
there we go.
I had that notification. Couldn't move forward like I didn't know that information. Anyways, I'm excited about this game. This feels like an old Florida State, Bobby Bowden versus Florida and versus with Steve Spurrier, like the old ball coaches getting together for a Sunday afternoon. Minnesota's 5-1 against the spread as a home underdog since 2016. Seattle 7-13 against the spread as a road favorite over that time span. Mike Zimmer at home. Mike Zimmer as a home underdog is a great play. I'm with you in the sense that the Vikings are due for one, right? I'm with you on that one. And that's what's holding me back from a teaser play that I really like. And I'm just going to throw this past you now and I'll button it up at the end. But I like taking the Panthers down from 7.5 to 1.5. I like teasing the Bengals Steelers up to 49.5. And a three-team teaser. This could be the spot for it where I take the Vikings up to 8 or 7.5, right? And I try to go for a fat middle because that's a 4 o'clock game. The other games, the Panthers are Thursday, Bengals in the early window. So I take the Seahawks and the money line for a fat middle because the Seahawks and Russell Wilson probably beat Kirk Cousins in Minnesota in a one-score game, but the plus 8's chunky enough. Just something I wanted to throw your way. I'm gonna actually play the middle in another spot, but that's something that I'm thinking of. And the reason why I'm staying away from it is because I do feel like you do. Like the Vikings are due for one. Like given the competition of Seattle through 3 weeks, they feel like they should be 1-2, and Vikings feel like they should be 1-2 as well. So that makes sense to me. The pros are on the Vikings. The Joes are on the Seattle Seahawks. But the play that I like in this one is under 55.5. The preseason line was preseason totals 48. It's went up 7.5 points. Based on what? Based on what? Well, Minnesota's got the second slowest neutral situation pace or seconds per play. Kirk Cousins is 23rd in intended air yards per pass attempt. And Minnesota has good weapons for Cousins to try to get out in space, try to get the ball out in space too. Bottom line is there's going to be a lot of dinking and dunking from Cousins. There's going to be a lot of tackles and open space by Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams, and the clock is going to keep rolling. Seattle has the fourth worst defensive pass success rate, but 12th ranked defensive rush rate. So I think they're going to do pretty good on Dalvin Cook, but they're going to get they're going to give up first downs, and they're going to get the clock is going to keep moving. They also. Seattle has the lowest time of possessions. They don't sustain drives, and they don't get teams off off the field fast. I'm going to wait as close to kickoff as possible because all the money is on the over. 80% of the money is on the over, and it's went from 51. This total opened up at 51 to 55. So Vegas already added in how Seattle's offense has looked, how Minnesota's offense and defense has looked through the first 2 weeks, and bumped this line up 3 points. The market's taking another 4.5. That's just too much. I'm taking the under here, 55.5. Also, back to the splits or the trends thing. Mike Zimmer, 2-4 to the under or over-under as a home dog since 2016. And Seattle... 8-14 over under as a road favorite. So the trends bode well for this as well. I'm on the under here.
Okay. And I'm on Minnesota plus 100 upset at home. Take that, Seattle. Next, possibly the game of the week, 2-0 teams. Tampa Bay Buccaneers are slight road favorites against the host Los Angeles Rams, 4:25 p.m. kickoff. The Bucs are minus 1.5, minus 115, minus 125 on the money line. The Rams are plus 1.5, minus 107, and plus 102 on the money line. Both teams are 1-1 against the spread. Both teams are 2-0 against the over-under. Total here, expecting a shootout, 55.5 with even minus 110 on both sides. The Rams disappointed last week, albeit on the road after a very convincing home victory on primetime in week one. The Bucs, they rebounded against the Atlanta Falcons after nearly losing a nail biter against the Bucs in the season or the Cowboys in the season opener. It still seems like too little for the Bucs against a Rams team who needs to reprove itself perhaps a little bit. After last week's semi-disappointment, I like the Bucs minus 1.5. They're just the better contender. They're now the Super Bowl favorites at plus 450. The Rams are plus 1,000. You know, Matthew Stafford looking good in L.A., but the Bucs defense can make him rethink some of his early season preferences among his receiving core, and then small edge to the Buccaneers run game, I guess. Bucs -1.5.
Okay, so the teaser middle situation I was talking about for the last game, heavy lean towards this. I'm not going to take it to my window, the three-team teaser. I'm only going to go the two-team teaser because I want to, like, I don't know, pad the stats, get what I think is a better, wiser play. But here's my thing. So you tease the Rams up to 7.5. You got the Panthers down to 1.5. You got... Let's go maybe the Ravens down to -1.5 or -2 at the Lions. And then you get the Rams +7.5, and you take the Buccaneers money line for a fat middle. My thinking is, I mean, I love Stafford. I love the Rams. I think they're going to be in the Super Bowl this year. But this really isn't a spot where Stafford excels against the playoff teams. Granted, it was always for Detroit, always with crummy rosters, crummy coaching, but like Tom Brady's a god. This is exactly where he excels, actually. Exactly, right? It's the game of the week. Who are you going to take to win the game of the week? Tom Brady or Matthew Stafford, right? So the Buccaneers probably going to figure out a way to win this one, and that's how I feel. So I can't play the Rams as much as I do like them. And Dak Dak and the Cowboys proved that if your offensive line can hold up, then this Tampa Bay secondary is exploitable. Stafford looks great with McVay in L.A., throwing a cup and behind an awesome offensive line. So the back door is always open for the teaser, and you can make a case that the Rams have as much talent as Tampa Bay, and being at home, maybe they figure it out. But I like the teaser play with the middle much more than anything. It's a tough one, man. It's a stay away outright for me, though.
Yeah, that's probably going to be a pass for me in the end, but I would lean to the Bucks. And hey, if you need some more action on the 4 o'clock slate when the time comes, lean to the Bucks. The Sunday night football matchup between the Green Bay Packers at 1-1 and the 2-0 San Francisco 49ers, 8:20 kickoff. 49ers are 3.5-point home favorites against the Packers team that redeemed itself last week. They're plus 3.5, minus 120 on the road, plus 145 on the money line for Aaron Rodgers fans and bettors. The over under 50.5, minus 115 on the under, minus 105 on the over. Green Bay, are they back? The 35-17 win at home in prime time against Detroit Lions, but you know, went into the second half trailing, looked pretty bad early on, at least defensively. Aaron Rodgers looked a whole lot better than week one. Aaron Jones looked fantastic. Obviously, the 49ers squeaked out a 17-11 win last week. Both teams 1-1, ATS and over under. I don't have enough to back the 49ers minus 3.5 here. I would rather pick Aaron Rodgers and the Packers at plus 145 than anything. I think if I want a piece of this game, Aaron Rodgers is just a better quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo, and that 49ers defense, although they contained Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles last week, I don't know if I'm going to believe in that MASH unit against rejuvenated Aaron Rodgers.
Tipico, is it at minus 3 or minus 3.5, you said?
Minus 3.5.
I lean to the 49ers at 3.5. And if it gets down to 3, I would just take it there. There's a lot more money is on the Packers. A lot more tickets are on the Packers. The preseason line was the 49ers minus 5, now it's down to the Packers minus 49ers minus 3.5. What have we seen from the Packers that would suggest that they got a 1.5-point boost from the preseason line? And the other thing is, like, Green Bay got bailed out of Monday Night Football. Like, San Francisco beat the crap out of Detroit and then let their foot off the gas. Detroit was at home. They kept chucking it. They got dumb lucky to even get in the back door. And it was more just like San Francisco taking their foot off the gas. Detroit outplayed Green Bay in the first half of that game. They had more yardage, more efficiency, better on third down. But, you know, it started downpouring in the second half, and Little Hands Goff started literally giving the ball back to the Packers. Like, he fumbled the snap. Packers got it. And then he was cocking back a throw. The ball went out of his hands. Packers picked it up. I think that was on a fourth down. Maybe he grabbed it and didn't do anything with the ball, and it was a turnover on downs. Detroit got the ball onto the Green Bay side of the field a couple times and didn't score. Like, there's nothing that Green Bay really did that was that impressive, right? They got helped out at home with inclement weather. Jared Goff, just not a good spot for him. San Francisco, 6 in total DVOA, 6 in offensive EPA per play. Green Bay, 25th in total DVOA, 22nd in offensive EPA. I just feel like the Packers got a huge Monday night win, and this is a fake sharp spot. The line should not have gotten closer based on what we've seen out of these teams thus far. Jimmy G ranks higher than Aaron Rodgers in DVOA, QBR, PFF, EPA, and on target rate. Some of these disparities are by just a wide margin. I think Philly's defense is pretty good. He did everything he needed to against Detroit's defense. Green Bay had just a complete no-show in week one. That doesn't matter at all. Like, everyone's like, well, hey, they're back. They beat the Lions at home. Okay, great. Yeah, they beat the Lions. They were losing at the end of the first half, just for the record. It's again, it feels like a fake sharp play. More money is on the Packers. Trendy dogs get slaughtered. I'll take San Francisco. As much as I don't even really like San Francisco, it's just kind of one of those, like, I don't see it with the Packers. So
okay, Monday Night Football. Dallas Cowboys 1-1 off of a 2017 road victory over the Chargers last week. They return home, where they are now favored at 3.5 points, -110 odds against the 1-1 Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles, a week one rout of the Atlanta Falcons on the road, and then fell 17-11 to those 49ers last week in their home opener. Both teams 1-1 ATS. The Eagles are 0-2. Over under, defense has been very good. Cowboys 1-1. I am big on the Eagles plus 3.5 here. The Cowboys got a win last week without DeMarcus Lawrence. I think that absence is going to be bigger or felt bigger against the mobility of Jalen Hurts. And this Eagles defense has been very good so far. The best I don't want to say it's the best because we know how good the Bucs should be, but they just weren't in week one. It should be the best defense Dallas has faced this year, at least. I like Philadelphia here in a road spot, big rivalry game. You know, they're going to play each other tight. Dak Prescott, tremendous in week one, took a step back last week. They weren't the barn burners we thought they were going to be. Although Dallas is plus 2,000 for the Super Bowl and Philly is plus 7,000. So that tells you a little bit about the long-term hopes of these Eagles. I still like Philly plus 3.5. I just love the hook in this spot, and they can lose by a field goal. It just seems what this game's going to end up being.
Yeah, I pass with a lean to the Eagles for pretty much the same reasons that you made, that you already stated. The defense looks legit. They're first in points per play on the defensive end. Philly's better in the trenches on defense. Dallas has a better offensive line. So that's going to be it's a strength on strength. We'll see how that plays out. It's a toss up in the quarterback rankings. Again, it's only through 2 weeks, and Dak has certainly played against tougher competition. Just because the week one for the Philadelphia Eagles was against Atlanta. The favorite and the home team in this series has done really well recently. It's just a stay away from me. I lean to the Eagles, but I don't know. It's tough. I don't have a lot, obviously.
Okay. Well, you want to take us to the window and recap your best bets for week three?
Absolutely. Let's do it and wrap this show up.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Going to the window.
All right. So this is going to the window. This is where we lock in our best bets. This week three NFL best bets. I'll get to in a second. My week two best bets went 2-2. I'm 5-4 in the season. I lost with the Eagles at plus 3.5. Lost with the Chargers at -3. Hit with the Texans plus 12.5. And hit on my teaser with the Ravens plus 9.5 and under. And the Saints Panthers 50.5. I have two sides in this on my slip this week. Two totals and a 6-point teaser. So beefy bet slip, I think. I'm going to go with Washington football team at plus 7.5 as my one side. And my other side, I'm going with the Panthers. And typically, you could buy it up to 3.5 at -140. That's something that I would entertain. But either way, Saints plus the points is going to be a contest play for me. So I'll give that out as a side. What are your sides?
Yeah, I have four this week after an ugly 0-5 week last week. No need to talk further about it. One over under here, Carolina at Houston, under 43.5, -115. The side or the spread plays Tennessee -5.5, -108, and Philadelphia plus 3.5, -110. I'm intrigued by Philadelphia's money line, but just can't seem to pull the trigger. Just the threat of Dak Prescott being the better quarterback here and much better receiving options for the Cowboys. Just gonna lay with the plus 3.5. And then one money line underdog, because I like a few this week, but the only one I truly want to bet will be the New Orleans Saints at plus 122 against the New England Patriots.
All right, so I have two totals that I like here on my bet slip. I'm going over the 52 for the Cardinals and Jaguars. And for both these totals, wait as close to kickoff as you possibly could. We're getting reverse line movement here with the total and the Cardinals, Jaguars. Everyone's on the under, but it's ticking up. So maybe I should wait a little long, or maybe I shouldn't be waiting. You know, the best time to bet over is in the beginning of the week. But since the money's coming on the under, I'm hoping maybe they bring it back down to 51.5. We'll see. And I also like the under 55.5 in the Seahawks Vikings. That's also getting over money, and it's moved up since it opened at 51. So maybe we can get a flat 56 close at a kickoff. But under 52 or under 55.5 for Seahawks Vikings, over 52 Cardinals Jaguars are my two totals. Do you have anything else in your bet slip?
No, that's it for my slip.
Okay, I have a 6-point teaser. I'm going with the Panthers down to 1.5 or through the key number of 3. And then I'll do under 49.5 for the Bengals and the Steelers. So 5 plays for me. What did you give out? 4 or 5 for yourself?
4 this week. Can't go 0-5 again that way.
We're going to have a I love that strategy. We're going to have a bounce back week, Essen. We're going to make ourselves some money and the listeners some money. Thank you for streaming the Bet Slippin' podcast. Best of luck in NFL week 3 or college football or fall baseball, whatever you're gambling on. Hopefully, the NFL pit stop you made here this week makes you some money in week 3. Till next time, peace.
You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast with Jeff Clark and Esten McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.